Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugapul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuccal, Quandamookal peoples. Also like to acknowledge elders. Elders of the first peoples of the land and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, live in the studio with me today, I have Mary Graham joining me. Welcome to the studios, Mary. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Tig. How are you?
I'm good. Feeling the cooler night air and stuff
nice.
Happening.
Yeah, very nice.
It is. Easier to sleep with the cooler air, isn't
it?
Cooler
nights. Definitely. Yeah.
Mary, any concerns with the budget? We hear all this hype and a whole lot of, I don't know, it's real scary stuff. It's like scare tactics.
It's very scary stuff, I think, for everyone, but especially for Murrays, eh?
Yeah.
For blackfellas.
But, Mary, one of the issues with this budget stuff, you also see other commentators, and I can't quote who or when, but there are other commentators that look at things on a broader scale.
Mm.
Where does Australia fit in as far as the strength of its economy within the international scene? And it's pretty damn healthy, apparently. And
well,
there are other countries that are far more bigger debt than Australia has.
Yes. Well, that's the news we've been getting for months since before even Labor was in power, that Australia's economy is very, very healthy. They're almost even envious. That's some of the comments I've heard. They're very envious that Australian, governments, how they've handled the economy, have done it much better than a lot of other countries that ought to have been okay, but they've made very many mistakes. But this country, it's conservative economic management. That's what I've heard, that it's quite good. So I don't know where, unless it's just purely ideological from the, as they say, from the Abbott's government, where they're saying that it's like a basket case, it's in a bad way, we're just this far away from collapse. You know what I mean? It's like, who is it, the guy, boy crying fire, you know what I mean? It's all about the collapse and so on. And they've got to step in really, really hard and save it. And I've just been reading this morning online newspapers where even other conservative people, economists and so on, are saying that the Abbott government is actually saying all these things in the extreme, exaggerating outrageously, actually, to enable themselves for the public to see themselves as being like the heroes, they're going to save Australia. That's what they want to be seen. So they're saying, everybody has to suffer, and some people are suffering more than others, and some people are suffering much, much less, like the rich, who don't pay any tax at all. There's a certain amount of, not many, not like thousands or something like that, but quite a few hundred of the richest people in Australia that don't even pay any tax. But they're going to be looked after. They're not going to suffer any pain under Abbott at all, not at all. The poorest and the most vulnerable Aboriginal people, poor white fellows everywhere, right across the country, they're going to do it really badly, very bad.
Mm. Yes, no, it's... And then you've got Warren Mundine there, the advisor, that's talking it up and saying, yes, there will be some cuts and it's got to happen. But you see, the government in place of the day always have that luxury, I suppose, or that position where they can blame the previous government. They've got us in a hell of a mess. They've done all of this wrong. They've done that wrong, It's a sad state of affairs when our political system, I don't know, just allows that sort of, is structured in a way. There's got to be a much more beneficial way.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to do that because when you've got a very conservative media, mainstream media, that agrees with mainly the coalition and conservative political elements in the country, give the Labor a hell of a hard time every time, it's very hard to get at the truth, really. That is no help at all.
Yeah, no, it's the media certainly no help. Mm. See in the news last night, Campbell Newman's going to introduce mining into education.
Mining?
You see that?
Yeah, mining into education.
Well, have a school set up so they can learn how to mine.
You're kidding. I didn't hear that.
This is Campbell Newman on the news last night.
What?
Where about
that
coal?
That is absurd.
Where about mining, he says. You're just unashamedly up there promoting mining and stuff and saying, yes, well, we need to introduce it into the education. We need a school.
School? I'm just flabbergasted. This gets worse. I thought it was bad enough they are actually going to mine the Barrier Reef, That is shocking.
So, you know, we've got the state politics, just, conservative like
yes,
this, that's gung-ho with development,
yes,
coal seam gas, mining, yes, a whole range of things.
The whole thing, it's all...
Yeah, nothing sacred like the Great Barrier Reef and stuff like that. It's just outrageous.
And they must work hand in hand, I'm sure, Newman and the Abbott government, because I've also seen where they are wiping everything to do with clean energy, absolutely everything, and it's gung-ho forward with... Just, you know, back to the, what do you call it, scorched earth policy. You know, just if it's there, we'll dig it up and flog it, you know, and don't care about the environment at all. I think that will be, you know, come back to really, really haunt them for saying things like that. You know, God, it's just sort of getting worse.
Scary stuff.
Yes. I was just looking to also in, and you can't expect all that much from The Australian, I don't think, because it's, Murdoch's paper always looks out for the coalition, of course. And even the heading of this, Indigenous bodies face merger to end funding failures. So they're always, always negative, demonising Aboriginal affairs, Aboriginal people, Aboriginal culture. The Australian, that's their tradition, you know, that's the way they've been doing it all along. But they're talking here about IBA, the Indigenous Business Australia, and the ILC, the Indigenous Land Corporation, joining them. I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but one of the main arguments is, and I have to say I don't entirely disagree with this, is that there's been an awful lot of money that goes into administration in Aboriginal affairs, you know. There's never been a really good approach to how to handle that. Why? And we've said this ourselves sometimes, you know, why does so much money, so little money get to Aboriginal people, but a huge amount of money is just eaten up in administration? You know, I know we've talked about that. I'm not saying I have any, brilliant sort of idea about how to do that, but it does certainly need better economic handling about that. You know, how do you change that for the good? But how they are talking, The Australian, is that everything to do with Aboriginal funding is a failure. It's almost like an expected, you know, what do you call it, funding to fail, you know, sort of image of Australian Aboriginal affairs, basically, you know. But So
do you think a merger offers that opportunity to reduce administrative costs? Is one little benefit there, or what are you saying?
See, I'm not quite sure. I would really, what they never do is really investigate or analyse, really fully analyse what does it mean. See, I wouldn't mind hearing from what's her name, Dawn Casey. She's the chair of both.
We had Dawn on last week.
Oh, right, okay. Well, see, what would she think of that? I mean, she might immediately go to the but if it's better, she might immediately go to the criticism of it. But if it's better for Aboriginal people, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really, not in the long run either, but immediately.
Yes.
So it's not so, you don't have to go to so many places for financial or economic assistance or support, I should say. Then that's good. But the experts in Aboriginal, among Aboriginal people in Aboriginal affairs, like Dawn Casey and a whole lot of people, do you know, they're the ones that should be, speaking out really and giving an analysis. And the media, you know, especially the mainstream media, they should be asking them because they are the experts in Aboriginal affairs to do with economics too, you know.
For sure. There was an Ernst & Young review done.
Yes,
with
that's
some,
right.
And they've got a few options. I think there were four options with the put up, and one of them being a merger and one, of course, being keep them separate and stuff.
Yes.
But the thing I find puzzling, Mary, with this discussion of IBA and ILC is why a couple of years ago, only recently, 2 years ago maybe, did they decide to have the one chairperson for these two organisations that have totally separate...
Totally separate, yes. Wrong move, I think. Yeah. Not only culture.
Never heard of it anywhere. Mainstream business or stuff.
Especially large organisations like that. They're huge. There's national organisations.
Yes. And talking about millions of dollars in the in funds for each organisation there. But they have the one chairperson.
One chairperson.
And the deputy chairperson.
Yes.
Both, for the two organisations.
Yeah. Well, culturally, it's not. I don't think it's a go at all. I don't think hierarchical, nationalistic kind of ideas has ever really properly worked. If there was a dual sort of chair, for heaven's sake, sooner or later in Aboriginal affairs, will any Aboriginal cultural stuff, importance, values, ever be given a go, ever be allowed to appear in Aboriginal affairs, or is it entirely a white construct, Aboriginal affairs?
We know the answer to that.
Yes, that's right.
We know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And then when you get your advisors, our First Nations representatives to advise the government, they sound like white fellas talking too.
Yeah. The most horrific thing I feel about this, or you can see how it's turning out, is that we're going back, you'll have to help me with years here, going back to before Charlie Perkins, before DAA, when there's nothing, absolutely no, because the Congress has had hits, it's been cut off at the knees, basically, funding-wise too, there's no representation at all. Mm. So we've gone back, how many years is that, decades?
Well, you've got to go back to the 60s. I mean, it was the 70s. Yeah,
yes,
it was
that's
the
right,
70s
right.
when changes in portfolios like Aboriginal Affairs and stuff was put into place. So it's 60s.
Yes.
And that's 50 years.
50 years, that's right.
That's 50 years.
This budget takes Aboriginal backwards. People... all across the country back 50 years.
Mm.
It's not even a case of, one step forward, two steps back. It's one step forward and about, 50 steps backwards, I think we should just go, myself, and I've said this before a lot of times, go straight for a treaty and increase our political strength among ourselves, our spirit, our all of that. Just go straight to it, because I don't think Australian governments, any of them, have ever had our best interests at heart at all. They don't do things for us in this,
of course.
So when you say positive way,
go straight for a treaty. Are you saying then that we should be on the ground in communities with our regional and national bodies?
Yes,
should be focusing on treaties and our community, our structures, the infrastructure,
and our very own way of doing community development.
Mm.
There are different ways of doing it and going for sovereignty, acts of sovereignty. Start working with our own people and stop being so many like advisors to government, advisors to this and advisors to that, because they're paper tigers, all of them, any kind of idea of giving an advice to the powers that be, that's always a weak position, very weak
position. Yes, it is. Yeah. And we've got Monica Morgan's on the line as we speak. Monica Morgan, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
Well, thank you again for having me.
Hi, Monica. How are you?
Hey, Aunt Mary.
Yeah, hang on. She's just putting the cans on.
I forgot.
Is that all right?
Good. How are you, love?
I'm good, thank you, darling, but freezing down here in Melbourne.
Yeah, freezing. Hey, what is it? What's the temperature down there?
Cold, right?
Or very cold. Very cold.
All right, Monica, tell us your mob, your country.
My mob are Yorta Yorta from the Murray River, southeastern Australia.
All right, Mary, I didn't get you to I overlooked that with you. You can tell us your mob, your country.
On my mother's side is Waka Waka, up in southeast Queensland, and on my father's side is the Combermary from down the Gold Coast.
Yeah. All right. We were just talking about the last point we were talking on. What was it, Mary?
Well, we've gone back 50 years, Monica, as far as funding, so-called, Aboriginal Affairs goes. Now we've got nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, as in representative, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, not even a department. And apparently the Indigenous Council, Advisory Council, that's been cut back itself, apparently. But I have to say I can't be absolutely sure about that, but that's what I've heard.
The Advisory Council, which one? The one with Mundine?
Yes, yeah. Mundine, yes, the one in...
You heard anything on that?
Yeah, have you heard anything?
Oh, well, he's gone silent for a little bit after shrieking that we needed to have the budget cuts and we need to streamline. And
streamline
of course
all that.
We had that Empowering Communities fiasco being rolled out.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm not sad about them being cut back because they had no mandate anyway, did they?
No, the sneaky way they came in, you know, not blaming... You know, all the Murrays involved in it so much, but it's, you know, it's just that the government, that particular government, you know, how it's worked like that.
I think our mob were a part of that sneaky deal. Yeah. I think that they've undermined, I mean, you have got a Congress there, they're very quiet, that's
far too quiet.
It hasn't been able to get its message out.
Yes.
So these blackfellas that have climbed on board of this advisory council actually have done us a disfavour, disservice.
Yeah.
They've taken away the ability for our people to voice as a collective and lobby government, as our mob have always done.
That's true. That is true.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, no, that's... well, there's always somebody there prepared to step up and grab the ear of the government and talk the same language as the government as opposed to talking our language of self-determination and... Yes. Particularly self-determination.
Especially that, yes.
Yeah, especially self-determination.
Yeah.
Mary was saying, just a minute ago, you were saying that we need to organise ourselves. I think it was in reference to treaties where you're saying we need to be putting things in place on community level, organising the infrastructure, organising the structure of things.
Our own structure of things.
Yeah. Just looking at, what can be done, you know, without government intervention and control and stuff like that, Monica.
Well, it depends on where we think a treaty is going to be. I was come from West, you know, blown away, not in a good way, by the... assumption by APG representatives that treaty was a non-go with blackfellas. You may as well kiss goodbye to treaty and sovereignty.
What are you talking about here? You're talking about the recent
about
gathering,
APG.
The recent gathering in Adelaide.
The gathering in Adelaide, and hopefully we'll touch on that. But there's too many of our leaders now trying to talk about practical outcomes and talking about giving away to the rhetoric of government that they'll never come to party with Aboriginal peoples. And I think that our old mob from, you know, 30s or last century or so that fought hard for where we are today would be absolutely appalled with the caving in of so many of our Aboriginal leaders who were saying practical outcomes, which really means, in my terms, is caving into government solutions.
And assimilation, eh? Really? That's
it's
practical.
Assimilation. Yeah. So what worries me is that we've got a whole lot of individuals purporting what needs to be for our... greater good, whether it's from the Congress, whether it's from the advisory committee, whether it's from individuals on the ground, even supporting the treaty process. What concerns me, are we doing it as individuals? Are we doing it as First Nations peoples? Are we doing it as a organisations? I think we really need to tease out exactly who we are today as First Nations peoples.
I couldn't agree more.
Before we even talk about setting up a structure.
No, that's it. That's exactly right, love.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, I always have this suspicion about leaders anyway, you know, like too many chiefs and not enough Indians, or rather not enough blackfellas, you know. We have to start talking to ourselves, really. The thing about a treaty, my own idea, is certainly not one treaty, but a whole lot of local treaties. I mean, we're... you know, whatever the number is left, really, are the different clans around the place, around the whole country, having a local treaties, and that means like almost like hundreds of treaties, basically. But it's still quite unclear myself. I haven't worked it out structurally or anything like that. But what I think what really is needed is what you're saying there is us having our having a conversation with each other, really in our own areas, and not trying to always aim for sort of like a unification kind of idea, because that's when every leader will come out from under their rock, you know, and want to sort of set their own agenda and so on and so on. That's a problem with unification, you know. I think we have to be unified on a local level, essentially. Start that conversation.
Absolutely.
Myself.
Absolutely. You know? Of course, we know that native title has been a great disservice to our people. It hasn't worked.
Absolutely.
But having said that, many, many of our people have entered into the process, including the Yorta Yorta.
Yeah.
And I think most of our mob will try anything.
Yep.
If it doesn't work, abandon it, you know. See it for what it is. But it's not the long-term aim of any people, so I don't think anyone's fooled into believing that. But there has been a growth in whether it, you know, sometimes it's been negative, there's been a growth in identification of nations, of people identifying. I mean, in the 70s, and that we were identifying as Aboriginal people and fighting for our survival. But these days, our mob are standing up and saying, they're identifying themselves in their mobs. That's a great advancement to me. I think
that
we should see that in the... In the positive.
And that is a great strength, eh? Great strength.
It has.
For us, you know?
And for one of the things that we've been able to do with the Yorta Yorta, I mean, I can only talk for my own mob, is that we took that process and built ourselves into our own nation structure, our own, I mean, because there's a body of law that's constituted under the white fellas umbrella, so you can get money and, you know, you can participate in that arm of life. But internally, you've got an unconstitution body of people. So we're not aligned in any white society. We're aligned in our family groups and we're aligned to our country.
Yes.
So we, you know, we've got to start looking at building organisation structures that represent not only family groups, but the individuals in those family groups, and then come together as a collective. So we've done that for the Yorta Yorta. I went to Adelaide to bring back information about where we're going with treaty. And you're right, every individual group needs to organise, talk amongst themselves about what it is that we believe is in a treaty on autonomy. But don't negate what the next person wants to do.
No, that's right. Yeah. There might be a whole range of different opinions among all the clan groups across the whole place. Some might be for a treaty, some might not be. Some might be quite happy to, well, I mean, I hate to say it, but assimilate in that sense, you know, and know who's to, you know, who's to blame them or whatever. But somehow we have to start this conversation, and real straight political conversations I'm talking about, not how we get our piece of the pie in this country, you know. We're on the bottom rung, and the deal making and the agenda building with government, always with government. I mean, are we ever going to be, you know, free of this? Free of their tentacles, you know. I mean, it is very hard. There's no doubting, you know, because we're the poorest mob. We're the poorest mob, you know. But somehow we've got to work through these dilemmas and the hard things, you know, the really, really difficult things.
Well, Monica, you've touched on attending a gathering in South Australia, in Adelaide. There were a couple of different forums there, and Mary, you were there.
Yes.
Both there. APG,
That was the
Convening Day Forum.
Yes.
And APG is the Aboriginal APG, Provisional Government that was set up by Michael Mansell and Jeff Clark and Bob Weatherall and people.
Bob Weatherall and people,
back in the early 80s, I think that might have been.
Way back, eh? You know, to tell the truth, I was really happy. I was really keen for the idea of an Aboriginal Provisional Government, you know. Because I thought it sounded to me like real politics, not assimilationist stuff at all. But it, for me, and that was where I really went to that meeting in Adelaide, not so much about the state, because I'd you know, disagreed with the idea of the Aboriginal state anyway.
The
seventh state. Because I thought, boy, that's like assimilation par excellence, you know. Absolutely. You want to be assimilated totally? Well, have a state just like all the other states. Do you know what I mean? Right. It just happens to be all Aboriginal kind of thing. But I was really more interested in where to now for the APG, because, I mean, if it had been really developed in a proper Murray way across the country, that means not having one leader, you know, or a small coterie of leaders, and mainly all male, no females, you know. I thought if they changed that, if that was changed, that could have been a really incredible strong force for good, for good for our political development, our Western style political development. Do you know what I mean? With cultural foundation too. And that's what I was hoping, but I actually got sick halfway through it and I had to leave. But that's what I was more interested in, not the seventh state, because honestly, there's a whole range of things that are wrong with that idea, whole range, besides culturally, but also politically too. It has this potential, the idea of a seventh state, for me, to be either that, a complete assimilated body. So we're a state like anybody else. We do all the same things. We mine, as that's what they were talking about, actually. You know, the idea of mining, of doing absolutely everything that other people in other states would do. Or if it's built straight on only on, you know, on Aboriginal people, in which case that's a very sort of dodgy concern then, if you have a state that's just for Aboriginal people. That's like Israel saying, you know, only Israeli people. Real Israeli people, you know, Jewish people are there, and everybody else has to, you know, kind of just stay quiet or be totally marginalised or done away with, as they're busily doing in Israel. In which case, you'd end up with almost like, I hate to say it, but almost like an Aboriginal fascist state, because that's what fascism is, actually, when you want to keep one group of people in one place and outside. I mean, it's the way that we've been treated all the time, you know, in a fascist way, really, you know, being rounded up and put on reserves and so on and so on. So it's dodgy in many ways, you know. But also the I don't know about you, Monica, but I felt that there was nothing in the notion of a seventh state that was cultural. It was all pure legal approach, pure legal approach, just the law.
White terms of reference.
And white terms of reference, white law. That's
white
all it was about.
White
structures, white ideas, and so on and so on. And a completely different idea of what self-determination is. Self-determination isn't something straight practical like that, you know, our own state. It's a far deeper and broader sort of idea. And it definitely includes our cultural values and so on. This is, you know, seven states, nothing to do with our cultural values.
What are your thoughts, Monica, regarding self-determination in seven states?
I think today in our big country, we are so lacking in strong, political, motivating, self-determining talk that... you know, we said to our mob, yorta yorta mob, two of us, so we represented the Elders Council. We said, we want to go over here. We want to listen to the symposium that was held at the South Australian University. Yeah. And, you know, it was about Aboriginal. I should have realised when I read it, but it was about, you know, getting Aboriginal people, academics really, around the table to talk about their theories around international law. And but the next day we said, well, all right, we'll go across because there might be some really good theories coming out, you know, that are challenging the white system from inside. I don't think you can. And then we went the next day to the APG. And I myself, like you, Art, I've gone to APG meetings in Tasmania earlier, you know, the concept in the 80s was that we needed to have like an independent kind of process available to us. And of course, then we had ADSIC, and that was when in the days when people were against ADSIC, but then it kind of wavered off, I think, because of advent of ATSIC, I think people built their wealth in relation to what was available. Mm. I mean, we heard Michael was very, very strong against native title and very much saying that, you know, self-determination is actually trying to acquire land rights in alternative to native title. So he's always been the agitator, which is fine. I think that, you know, he was well regarded in that way, you know, championing. But I was dismally disappointed, absolutely disappointed with if we thought we were going to advance anything. Look, we were sceptical about a seventh state, but we're open to listening. Gone and listened to Michael Anderson and, you know, the 10 embassies. So we've got to listen and learn and trade ideas. The seventh state was really about those blackfellas lucky enough to have pots of land. What they didn't, so that's land all around Australia,
which would include Kamaraganja. Your community has title to land.
Got a little spot of land. Yep. The only land that Yorta Yorta people have got is a little spot of land that's an ex reserve that's under the Land Rights Act, which is a statutory authority, and and so everyone, we bury our people. Everyone, all of the Yorta Yorta people, that's our heartland.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so they were talking about those kinds of lands. He was also talking, he put a map on the thing about how much land is owned by Aboriginal people, but really, in reality, the government owns most of the land. And he talked about native title lands, which threw me because he was a man that never believed in it. Mm. So the Seventh Nation isn't a solid piece of land such like Tasmania or New South Wales. It is a floating confederation of land bases held by Aboriginal people, whether it's in perpetuity
or various titles.
Didn't describe the tenure of them, so that was a problematic. But of course the largest amount of this type of land is in the Northern Territory, so of course that formed the bulk of the lands. Then he talked about you're right, Mary, he never said anything much about even though when he had to recognise that people come from nations, they didn't describe how the nations would actually exist and govern in their own sovereign right.
Right.
And basically he talked about a pan-Aboriginal state that would be like any other white state become part of the parliament. So I think the suggestion was that the APG would be the representative body, and it didn't even say how the state would be divided up. You know, I tried to say, well, would you have local governments so that the nations are like local governments? I was trying to be a little bit exploratory with it, but when I actually showed a picture of our whole country, Yorta Yorta country, on the board and the dot of the land that we actually held for ourselves under a statutory regime, you know, the Land Rights Act, that can be taken at any time from us. I said, so the rest of our country, what do we do with that? You know, the country that's, because to us that's our land. It might be occupied by white people, but it's our land. And we've got a responsibility to look after that. Then I got a response that nearly knocked me off the table. He said, sovereignty is dead and gone. Basically, he said, there's no such thing as sovereignty, and basically threw away the proposition for treaties. And he said, you have to have practical outcomes. They're pragmatic, and they're trying to look at things within a white system. Well, basically, he didn't say that, but it's in a white system. And I think what's come up clear to me for those 2 days, and I'm not being antagonistic in relation to people's need to explore the white system, is that we have a bunch of people that are so wedded to the white legal system and to the academic system that sometimes we lose sight of who we are as Aboriginal people. So the people on the ground, the the grassroots, as you might like to call it, or the people on the ground who actually are in poverty, are the voiceless ones. And it really came clear to me, who is control of our dialogue? It's not the mob on the ground. So I'll go back to Yorta country and I'll talk to our mob that's made up of all the family groups and saying, well, we've got to start looking nation to nation.
That's right.
We've got to start recognising our own autonomy, our own sovereignty, but also recognise our next-door neighbour's sovereignty and autonomy to do whatever they please. But maybe that's the start of
our conversation.
Our First Nations Assembly.
Yes, that's right, love.
Yeah.
That's exactly the idea that I had for have had for a while, is we actually start talking to each other and forming, and we must have done, I'm pretty sure this was happening in the all along the old days, you know, is that we had agreements between neighbours, you know, which were maybe in the modern terms they would have been like treaties, but they would have been agreements of long-standing diplomatic traditions and so on and so on. I'm always been a great believer is that we have to empower ourselves by recognising our own institutions. You know, we have to do that. Because nothing else will empower us. And if we're going to be happy with not being empowered, well, we may as well just all give up and be assimilated then, you know.
And our real strength and power is in our culture
and our identity
and our land. That's where our real strength and power is.
That's right. And
we're foregoing
all those protocols.
That.
We're foregoing that.
When we look at the seventh state proposal, we're foregoing all of that.
Yes,
when
yes.
To hear that, sovereignty is no longer an issue.
And
we are foregoing and not recognising the real power and strength that we have in our culture and in our land.
That's right. And, you know, all these state advisory, Commonwealth advisory, federal advisory bodies, all of them, including Congress, really, I must say, is, you know, none of that will ever give us power, as much power as, and, you know, this is arguable, I guess, is that us on the ground, wherever we live, me on the Gold Coast, you know, on my father's people's area, and the relationship with the Gold Coast City Council, the mob who are here in Brisbane, the traditional mob, the relationship with the Brisbane City Council, and all those smaller places, you know, shire councils everywhere, that's the closest thing to having some kind of a proper relationship on the ground, not with a national body of any sort or anything. Because even Congress, even though I like Congress only from the point of view because it had gender equality in it, see? So, you know, it recognised women's law, very rare, you know, and that was a very good thing, I think, you know.
APG hasn't got gender equality.
Definitely hasn't got any, never had any gender equality at all, you know. I might have been even more happy about it if they had. But, so I think, you know, our agreements with each other first, and that might take years, you know, and then look at having relations, treaties, small treaties, on a small regional level basis, you know. It's the closest thing we'll ever have to self-determination, a complete holistic understanding of what self-determination is, you know, because on a local level, those local government people, they're local people too, you know, and quite often, you know, mightn't have a very good relationship, you know, racism. There's nothing more racist than some country or some local councils, you know. But at least you know who you're talking to, really, and they're not going to go anywhere. They're not racing off back to Canberra or Brisbane, you know, capital city or anything.
So really, are you saying, ladies, we're needing to establish our own agreements or arrangements within our own mob and our own from our own perspectives and things. But we also need to be defining, I suppose, who can talk for country
and who can talk.
Who
That's
can
right.
talk for country? Because there's a big problem in here now.
Yes,
where every black fella lives in a particular area wants to be boss for that area and.
Yes.
question every other black fella.
Yes.
About, well, what are you doing, and have you got the right to be talking to these people down here with with this radio station, all this sort of stuff. So it's really about having those discussions in our, amongst ourselves, because amongst we can't talk about treaties, Mary Monica. Yeah. Until we can make those, you know.
Our structure in our own homeland. Of our autonomous homelands.
And be able to recognise who can speak for country and have those have the frameworks in place, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. A structured framework.
Yes.
You know, we've got to decide on what a structured framework is. Like, for example, I've always thought that boards, you know, committees and boards, they are strictly a Western invention and they're very hierarchical. You know, if we had our own system of that, now I know that'll be a very difficult thing because, you know, if, in order to even have funds, even having your own funds, having a company, say, you have to set it up in a hierarchical way, you know. So we have to really look carefully at that. The nearest thing to a authority come power structure are older people. Do you know what I mean? That's a proper traditional thing, but in this modern sort of, you know, the way it is now with young people, a lot of young people, you know, they've had a different education level, you know, not just level, style, I should say, from older generation people. Somehow they've got to be like partners, really, old and young. They got somehow it's got to be structured in such a way that
sit up side by side.
That, not elders as a kind of a hierarchy like king and queen, or as some people mistakenly think it was, you know.
Can I just explain what we've done in your theatre?
Yeah.
And we've gone about doing a treaty process, all the nations along the Murray River.
That's terrific.
And signed a document with all the states in regards to the water. It wasn't about water rights, but it was about the protection of forested lands that were really wetlands that were really important to us. And for your theatre, I'm talking about this unconstituted and constituted. So our identity has a basis of land. Truthfully, in southeastern Australia, we don't have the dance or the ceremonies that go with it, but we have a long standing history and connection to our country, because we're talking about 5,000 people or more. And we've got a family kinship system that goes back 8-9 generations, even more, you know, before Cook landed. So we've built on two things. The constituted process is, of course, to enable us to develop legal frameworks in which we can sign off with, and we sign off with a multitude of government bodies and agencies and shire councils. So we've got 6 shire councils in our region. We're signing off 3. So we're doing a whole lot of that stuff in our own country. The family groups, all people who belong to a family group, and it's self-nomination. So if you belong to that family, you go to that family group and you plead your case, you know, so have to show genealogical. We have 16 family groups. In that 16 family groups, one person is elected or appointed to go on the elders, your elders council, which is the constituted body. But the family group itself is an unconstituted body. You can be a member of the your nation corporation, or you don't, but you participate in your family group at whatever level you want to. We have a youth circle, so two youths are appointed to the youth circle. And we have an ability to nominate who stands for the governing committee. So we separate the powers from the elders for veto rights over land, culture, negotiations that may destroy or impair our country in any way. And then you have the governing committee who will advance and sign off on a legal entity point of view, the negotiated agreements, will handle the finances, will do all those things. And so we have a very self-contained, very strong, and it has a lot of the problems because some family groups are stronger than other family groups. Some participate more than others. So you may have an unevening, but we have a training. We've developed our own ATO, which is our own training organisation, to and hopefully start looking at enterprise and all those things on our own initiatives and things. But the most important thing is that we just didn't do it in a, as an island. As a, the recognition is that we, as all Aboriginal people, are connected. We're connected through song lines that might be the river course, so the Murray River. So we then went out because the water coming through our country was flooding our country, but there's not enough down the other end in South Australia at the Coorong. So we needed to negotiate with the agencies who were looking after the water and say, look, we collectively want to tackle the National Water or the Murray-Darling Basin Commission and how it's handling water and not taking in our consideration. So each of the nations then put up two elders, which was supposed to be a male and a female, and sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, but but the treaty that we had with each other was we recognise the autonomy of that mob, the right for that mob to make its own decisions, to sit around the table as a confederacy and to negotiate on things that had an impact equally with both of us.
So therefore,
that was the connecting part.
Yes.
Because we share the waterways, we share the air, we share the... We can't control the kangaroos or the things going into the next land. Or we have a transmission or our mob going up and down the river.
Yes, that, and that's all
How
practical.
How do you look after people going up and down the river?
Yes, yes. That's all practical stuff, isn't it, too?
Well,
you know, but it's brilliant, Monica.
It's fraught with,
great.
You know, it's undermining by government agencies, trying to go back behind our doors. But because we've
always do that.
Solidly built a basis, then we know who is supposed to be speaking for us and why. And they've built up other other rival nation groups, of course, who are the same people. But But essentially, if you stick to your guns... Now, what is... pulling us apart is that we have those organisations such as health services, legal services in the small towns that will cater for the interests of historical people as well as traditional owners. And they, and have you ever gone into a community and the community organisation is called the community and it's the community controller?
Yes,
that's because they have the funds and the finance.
That's right.
And they look after the civil rights of our people. But they aren't the inherent right holders.
No.
We need to tease apart those services that service our civil rights.
Yes.
And those that actually service the inherent rights. Because I believe treaty making and land ownership in that way is... treaty is really the inherent right holders, the traditional owners.
Monica, sorry, love, we're sort of slowly getting towards the end, but I just wanted to ask, is that all written down in, is that in a site on, you know, on the computer? I mean, the description?
Website?
Yeah, has it got its own website?
The Yorta Nation has its own website. And
With all that you're saying, is that
No,
sort of,
you know what?
It's probably brilliant.
Something... because I've gone through the process for the last 30 years with my elders who, of course, passed away, and I'd been part of that building up and, you know, helping. We did this through the native title. We didn't let the native title
So it was the catalyst for it.
Us.
That was a catalyst for it, even though it was not the... didn't dominate,
Yes, but maybe that is something that needs to be written up because I know that when you're travelling along and you're so focused on what you're doing, sometimes you forget to reflect back. And I kind of see that now in some of the young ones, that they're not, they don't understand the pathway
or
the vision that
they don't
people
understand
that went
the history.
Before them.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
known the history.
What
the young ones today don't know the history.
They don't know the history, and that needs to be told. But I think that there's many of examples, such as ourselves, who have I've met many who have organised themselves in that way, and we're ready and willing at any time to come and talk with other mobs, but also to. to be a part of that setting up of the assembly.
Yes,
now,
that's great.
The, you know, so we need to talk with the mobs in the north, talk in the mobs in the west, in the south, but we financially don't have that capability, so we talk to our neighbours.
Yes, no, good. That's great. But but look, honestly, it's that would be wonderful if it was more in detail like you were talking on that website. That would be invaluable for other people who are at different degrees, you know, the different degrees of development.
What are some of the key principles, some of the key principles, Monica, for this development to take place or for this building of community, this building?
Reconstruction, isn't it?
Yes, it's
like
a reconstruction.
Of the community itself.
That's what
we're doing.
Is reconstruction.
But in our way, in your way, you know, in our way.
But keeping firm to the principles of recognition of self, families, culture, that the priority is our land, and the priority is to do good by the land, you know, so we take care of our own burials as well as go through and have agreements with Vic Roads going through our country, you know.
Yes. Well, you must work with the local government then.
That's
a lot,
right?
Yeah.
It's just natural.
I mean, six local governments were against us in our native title.
But that hasn't
stopped us
sitting
down at the table with them.
That's right.
Because there's nothing that defines us. That native title determination doesn't define us. It was just one of those things along the way that tested us, and we tested the system.
Deadly.
But we are who we are. So, yes, we are developing agreements.
Jeez.
It may not be at the level of what we would like because, of course, you know, there's a long way to go, really.
But that starts. The first steps have been
taken. As a unified voice of peoples, can we push the state?
Yes.
We have to see the state as the other being, not be the state.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And not bow down to the state either. You know, that sort of thing.
And no, I believe that, and I won't ever, non-Indigenous peoples, white people, are scared of the power of black people. Yeah. And the dividing and conquering
Very wary.
Very wary, but we've got to strengthen ourselves and we've got to look at the people like Gandhi and all them different mobs that you just stay on your pathway. Don't be detracted off it all the time with this and that and the other, you know?
I was thinking of some of the principles that you're just... You are espousing anyway, you know, to do with the autonomy. You know, the autonomy is a big thing.
Sovereignty,
territorial integrity of the other.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Everybody respecting your territorial integrity, and so there's a whole lot of balance there. You know, respect for our cultural values always. You know, and it's an ethical system. It's an ethical system in all sorts of ways, you know. Relations between people, relations between gender and age-wise, and relations, good relations, aiming for and building up relations with the white fellows around, eh? And that, in the end, that should make them feel a bit more confident or, what do you call it, not wary, you know, not frightened of black fellows the time.
I don't think we did it purely because we worried about what the white fellows
said. No, I know.
They always feel
our authority on our country.
Yeah, that's right. And
they shouldn't
be wary of that. They shouldn't. You know?
No,
this
is what Monica's described there is exactly what you what we were discussing and trying to say early when Monica first came on. Was we need our own discussions, our own gatherings, and identify.
Yes.
The framework.
And sharing.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
I went to South Australia thinking they were going to share good ideas, not to be told that
there's
your
no
sovereignty and your give up on any of those things that ever held us as Aboriginal people or First Nations peoples, me as a Yorta Yorta person, and it's like assimilating.
That's it.
Giving away.
You've hit it on the head. It's pure assimilation.
Yeah, yeah.
Monica, it's been great that you've joined us this morning for this yarn.
It's wonderful hearing from you, love. It's great.
It's good for people to hear what Yorta Yorta mob are doing and taking those steps. And let's hope more of our mob around the country will start to, including us up here, will start these discussions and gatherings and the steps for self-determination, decolonisation. That's what we're your mob are embracing. That's what we're all about. Hey, thanks for joining us, Mon. We're close to news time. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
The Yorta Yorta woman, thank you very much.
See you, love. Bye.
Keep up the great work. Radio. Monica Morgan, the Yorta Yorta woman, joining us there. Certainly some great discussion there, Mary. Some great ideas.
Absolutely. Gee, I really look forward to their website, you know.
All right. Thank you, Mary, for coming in.
Thank you. That was really good.
Thanks very much. Really good to have you in the studio again live. We've got the aunties again in a couple of weeks, I think.
All right. Yeah.
But anyway, people, you join us. You can join me tomorrow for Let's Talk on your local First Nation station. Have a great day.